2052.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500 AM.
It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford. I'm your host this morning. Today we're going to be hearing from representatives from two different federal employee associations. First, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Officers for the first half of the show. And the second half, we'll be joined by the executive director of the National Association of Federal Veterinarians. So we're going to hear about the issues dealing with law enforcement officers, I think, in general, and specifically the challenges that that black law enforcement officers face. And to help us with that, I have the president of NOBLE, National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Officers, Will Plummer. Will, welcome to Fed Talk.
Oh, thank you.
And Will is the, you're currently a federal employee. Will, tell us what you do.
Currently, I work for the Drug Enforcement Administration, serving as Special Agent in Charge of the Enforcement Division out of our New York Field Division in New York.
Okay, so you're the SAC, as they call it in law enforcement lingo, in New York.
Yes.
For DEA, and you are a member of, the Senior Executive Service?
Yes, that's correct.
Tell us a little bit about your career as a DEA agent. A lot of people would find that be somewhat exciting, interesting kind of occupation to be in.
Oh, yeah, very exciting job. Started out in Baltimore after graduating out of the academy. Was first assigned to the Baltimore District Office, where I served up there until 2000. Then after that transfer, did a stint in headquarters in Washington, D.C. And then from that, served down on the in Texas and out of the San Antonio Laredo office along the southwest border. And then from that got promoted to the senior executive service rank and was transferred up to the New York Field Division, which is one of our largest field divisions in DEA.
And how many agents work for you? Are you allowed to talk about that?
Yes. Presently over 235 agents work for me, about 450 employees total with the task force officers.
Okay, we're going to be getting into a little bit more about NOBLE and the specific issues that that are dealt with by that organization. But I would like to remind our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And if you would like to participate in our conversation today, if you have a question, give us a call. Our phone number is 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And I'm delighted to have Will Plummer, the president of NOBLE, and we also have Michael Gilsdorf, the executive director of the National Association of Federal Veterinarians, for the second half of the show, because there are probably hundreds of different associations of federal employees, and from time to time we'll have someone on to talk about that, but I think this is the first time we've had your two groups on, so we're delighted to hear about your interest, the things that you care about, and the concerns that you have, and hopefully you'll have something that's of interest to all federal employees. So if anybody does have a concern or a question, please feel free to get a hold of us, and we'll talk about your issues. Will, tell us a little bit about NOBLE.
First, I serve as the federal assistant to the national president. As such, NOBLE was started in 1976, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, and they have served as the conscience of law enforcement, addressing critical issues germane to improving both the law enforcement profession and its service to our community. And we do that in two folds, whereas the professional experience is through training and a national conference that is given every year during the summer, usually around in July, August. And secondly, in the community, is by serving as very areas of interest that are concerned to Noble members, such as racial profiling, family violence, minority recruitment.
Yeah, racial profiling, you mentioned. Isn't that something law enforcement people do to other people? Is that an issue your organization cares about?
Yeah, it's one of the issues that Noble take up also.
And how do you do that? How do you get involved in racial profiling issues?
Mostly Noble through grants that they're granted and serving mainly primarily through studying various law enforcement departments, and from that coming out with various training techniques that they use throughout the year through their conferences and then through the various regions of Noble and service those places.
So is it a kind of thing where you're trying to convince police departments or teach them ways so that they can reduce racial profiling?
That's correct.
And that's something your organization cares about,
yes.
I would imagine. Okay. Even though your members are the ones out there enforcing the laws and could even be accused of racial profiling, even though they themselves are African Americans.
That's correct.
So, okay, what are some of the other issues?
One of the primary issues that face with Noble now is with youth violence, and how Noble is trying to decrease the amount of youth violence is through their programs, the youth leadership initiative that they sponsor each year.
Okay. Anything else?
Another issue that has come up is also drug enforcement is a popular issue with Noble that Noble's also involved in trying to decrease. And that goes up my alley as well.
I would imagine.
Yes.
You're probably a fairly good resource for that.
In drug enforcement also, a key issue now that's come up is the prescription drug abuse. And it's also, you've seen an increase in that in youth also as well.
Okay. What about the federal part of your program? You said I'm sorry, but I had it written down here that you were the president, so I thought that was right.
No.
But so you're the advisor to the Noble president for the federal program?
Yes, on federal issues.
On federal issues. So what are some of the federal issues you all care about?
It's youth violence. Drug enforcement is another issue, and training is one of the concerns that we as the federal members bring to Noble and try to increase that popularity in those parts.
Okay, and tell me a little bit about some of the training issues.
Some of the training is with the annual conference each year that Noble puts on, training law enforcement agencies from around the country. This year it's going to be, it was just past year, it was held in Baltimore, and there's a venue that we have there where there's training put on by various agencies.
It's like federal agencies?
Federal agencies come in. FBI might come in and teach on terrorism. ATF may come in and teach on explosive. DEA might come in and speak on drug issues, diversion issues, asset forfeiture. And then there's also leadership training that comes in. Various agencies bring in both paid and non-paid people to come in and teach leadership techniques.
Okay. And one of the issues that I've been involved in, particularly like for example in the senior executive service, is diversity in a general sense. And I don't know to what extent does Noble get involved in diversity in law enforcement as a general proposition.
Yeah, it's one of the key issues, and especially with the members of Noble being primarily African American senior leaders in even both the federal sector as well as executives in the state and local law enforcement. One of the things we try to instill during the training sessions is to bring in and identify individuals in both the federal and the state law enforcement and give them training and the tools to try to make it to the next level in their organization.
Okay, so you try to help those individuals who are currently law enforcement officials to advance. Do you do any work on trying to figure out, first of all, whether there is a lack of diversity, whether it's getting better, whether it's not, and what can be done to make it better if there's a problem?
Yeah. One of the issues as serving as a federal assistant to the president, I'm in contact with various federal agencies, and those issues come up to me through either email or people will write to me or give me a telephone call and tell me about different issues they may be having with diversity in their own agency. And one of the things that Noble do each year is go out, meet with the leaders of every single federal agency. We try to go and meet with the head of Customs, the head of Border Patrol, the head of DEA, the head of FBI, ATF. And if these issues come up, we bring those to the forefront with those administrators.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm talking to a Noble, a federal advisor to the president of Noble, National Organization of Black Law Enforcement, Will Plummer. And we're talking about Noble's issues and what Noble does. And we'll continue with our discussion after this short break.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. By now, you've no doubt seen those car insurance commercials with the talking gecko on TV. He's always talking about how people could save 15% or more switching to GEICO. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal in and of itself. But get this. If you're an employee of the federal government, you may be eligible to save even more than that. That's something the GEICO didn't mention in all those commercials. And you've probably heard many times about how many people have switched to GEICO. Millions. But what you might not know is how many people stay with GEICO once they've switched. In fact, on average, GEICO customers who are federal employees have stayed with the company for over 20 years. Now that's customer satisfaction. Sound like a good deal to you? Then just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Bill Bransford, and right now I'm talking to Will Plummer of Noble, National Organization of Black Law Enforcement. And in a few minutes, after the next break, we're also going to be talking with Michael Gilsdorf from the National Association of Federal Veterinarians. Will, a few minutes ago, you talked about youth violence. Tell me a little bit more about what Noble does on youth violence.
Some of the things that Noble has been involved with in trying to understand youth violence and giving youth a voice is doing since 2008, has been going around the country having town hall meetings. They've had them on the East Coast, started with the East Coast, then went to the Midwest and went to the West Coast. And that was first to get a chance for the youth to come out, speak out, explain what's going on, and then try to set up through the use of a white paper where a professor from Howard University has taken the information from those town hall meetings and come up with a plan and a strategy that Noble can try to implement through through various programs that we sponsor throughout our chapters.
And do you know if that program has been successful?
One of the programs that started at that's big in some of the federal agencies as well as the state and local agencies is the Big Brother Sister Program Workplace Mentoring Program. I can take an example. In my own agency in DEA New York, we've been involved in the Big Brother Sister Mentoring Program for the past, I believe, past 6 years. And you've seen a turnaround where you take a youth, bring them into the federal government, the workplace, give them the tools, give them an opportunity to see law enforcement at a different level. Some people kids that may never get a chance to see that, and maybe they become interested in that field. If not that field, then we can try to guide them toward other areas.
Of course,
areas.
If they are interested in that field as a career, they have to kind of keep their noses clean, right, and stay out of trouble. Otherwise, that's sort of disqualifying.
That's correct. And another issue is also the Explore program. It's a national program, state and local. It's almost similar to Boy Scouts, where you have chapters throughout the country sponsored by either a federal agency or a state and local agency. These programs help to try to keep young people off the streets, get them involved in something after school programs, and then also give them exposure because there's a conference every 2 years, and they bring kids from throughout the United States. And during that time they have a conference, they have a chance to train, take on also experience where they may, like for instance, in Secret Service will sponsor a team, and they may end up doing almost like a CSI experience where they're going into fraud. We have our explorers from the DEA usually do search and seizure exercise, raid exercise. It's a fun time, but also it's a learning experience from them. In this way, Noble has looked at it that, you know, if we can give youth some kind of alternative to maybe just hanging out, or also maybe potential for joining a gang, or just trying to steer youth in another direction.
Have you got any feedback on how effective your program has been, whether it's really reduced youth violence?
It started just about 2 years ago, so I don't know if we still have the data, but I do believe if you see the turnouts where these town hall meetings have taken place, has been tremendous with just not only the community, but with the youth who come in and express different things where you know, a chance for someone to listen to them, but also a place where we can say, okay, here's programs here, either be the Explorer program or either Big Brothers Big Sisters program. Here's some avenues where you can also get involved in, and in this way we can help try to guide them throughout their time when as teenagers all of us experience maybe chance where you want to speak to someone else besides your parent. Your parents is there, but also even if you only maybe have one parent or a grandparent or someone who's watching over, to be able to say somebody else, especially with law enforcement, so they see law enforcement not just as a person who's coming in when there's a problem, but someone's coming in on the front end.
And so you have your federal law enforcement officers involved in this program just as much as your local people with Noble?
Mostly federal agencies involved with it, also state and local. And then plus at the level that most of the members of Noble are in, the executive level, we're not out patrolling at the time, so we're more so in the office and then can help run these programs and then take the time out throughout the day to have youth come into the office, work with them, and then also to also give other people the incentive to try to help them work out also.
So Will, if somebody's interested in learning more about Noble or becoming a member, how do they do that?
It's the website is national, noblenational.org.
N-O-B-L-E national.
.org.
Yes. And they can just get all the information there that they need to learn more about Noble.
That's great.
And you also mentioned that you have a prescription drugs program. Can you talk a little bit about that? And I assume it's not DEA, that's Noble, right?
I know it's DEA, but Noble is one of the partners in that.
Okay.
There's on Saturday, actually tomorrow, September the 25th, is the National Prescription Drug Take Back Program. And what is the National Pill Take Back Initiative? Nationwide, DEA and our community partners have worked together in order to identify collection sites around the nation where Americans can turn in their unused, unneeded, expired prescription medication. So far, we have about over 4,000 sites throughout the country and around probably over 2,700 law enforcement partners who've joined in with us, these state and local officials, where you can come in, you set up from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, where you can come in, empty out your medicine cabinet of unused, unwanted medicine by not flushing it down the toilet, putting it in the trash, or bringing it to a location where you can safely dispose of it. Because we found in the last year or two, you see an increase of overdose for prescription drugs, and also where you have like youth now who are raiding medicine cabinets, friends coming into the house, taking medicine, parents unaware of it. This is a way where we can safely get rid of this medication.
Get rid of the old unnecessary medicine that could be causing problems.
Yeah, they can become dangerous if they're taken.
This is tomorrow.
Yeah, it's tomorrow. From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., you can go on www.dea.gov, go in there, look at the
DEA.gov. Okay.
Yes, and look at Got Drugs icon, click on that, and you'll see it, put in your zip code, and you'll be able to get a collection site near you where you can go safely dispose of these drugs.
And Noble's involved in that project as well?
That's correct.
What's
posted
Noble
on the Noble website as well.
What's Noble doing with it?
Noble, some of the partners that we have are also leaders in Noble.
Okay. And when you one of the issues I think is on your list here of things that Noble's concerned about is recruitment and retention, hiring and promotion of law enforcement officers. Tell us a little bit about that.
Now, one of the things that Noble does is during the national conference is also having federal agencies from all our primary agencies, the NCIS, which is the Naval Criminal Investigative
Service.
You've
got right now NCIS and the Marshals are all the sexy agencies. They're the ones on TV.
Yeah, and people can find a lot about that when they see the television.
DEA doesn't have its own show yet.
But we have had one recently on Spike TV, but we'll probably come up with another one in the future. But these law enforcement shows, but it gives people exposure to agencies that you may not know that have 1811s in them, like the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
And 1811s, for our listeners, are those are the federal law enforcement officers that carry weapons, that carry guns, and arrest people. They're 1811s,
and,
right?
Yes, and these are special agent positions throughout all United States Secret Service, ATF, mostly at the conferences. Booths are set up where people, state and local officers, also can get a chance to come out. And you know, we don't want to steal people most primarily from the department, but we're always looking for some of the best and brightest folks in the profession to come out and also maybe interested in joining our side of the law and the federal laws.
And do you find recruiting minorities to law enforcement as a challenge, or is it easy, or how do you deal with it?
At this time, with the economic downturn. Usually when there's an announcement for open season for applications, we're overwhelmed. What we try to do, we go out to certain universities, historically black university colleges, HBCUs, and go out and try to, on their career day, to recruit people also. We want a diverse pool of people as well. We need that in the workforce, in the jobs that we do, be it DEA, be it the United States Secret Service, diplomatic service, postal inspectors. Everyone nowadays is looking for a diverse pool, to be reflective of the United States of America, the world that we work in.
And as a lawyer, I read lots of cases about, it seems like, groups of law enforcement people, firefighters, minorities, and sometimes the white officers. There's constant litigation about the lieutenant's exam or being promoted. And does Noble get involved in that kind of thing and the fairness in hiring and selection?
One of the things that Noble do is training. During the national conference, there's a section where it's a little bit different than with federal agencies. Federal agencies, more so, they're standardized tests, and each agency is different the way they promote. But in the state and local, is usually a panel examination, then a panel. What Noble does during the conference is you have training going on that'll help those officers be able to be better test takers and also be able to sit down before a panel and be able to respond by doing role play, also giving them the tools by giving people coming into training about report writing, resume writing, so that you can better present yourself.
All right. And what about issues in Congress? Are there any issues in Congress that you all care about or that you're interested in? This is Noble now.
Not at this time. Not on the list.
They're not. No, you have nothing on the list. Okay. Well, what about you? You are a senior executive at the Drug Enforcement Agency. Tell us a little bit about being an SES at DEA. You have your own SES system, I think. It's separate from the regular SES system.
Yeah, the FBI and DEA are the two agencies that have their own, been given authorization from Congress to establish their own system. But we kind of follow the same pattern where in DEA, per se, the protocol is that you must write on the same core
the executive core qualifications
that everyone else does,
yeah, right.
OPM measures. You write on those, you get a score, it's ranked and rated, and you have a score, but then it comes down to the selection from the administrator who then appoints from the list, because we come up with a list of qualified, best qualified, and I can't remember the last qualification level, but it's three levels. And from the best qualified list, the administrator selects the person for the SES position.
Okay. Well, it sounds to me like you've got a great job that you get to do up there in New York with all those agents and a lot of interesting things. And what Noble, putting the Noble part in there, it sounds like you're able to do that in a way that really enhances what you do as a federal law enforcement official.
Yeah. One of the things with DEA has always been on the forefront on is state and local participation in task force. And actually, DEA has one of the oldest task force, and it's actually the New York Drug Enforcement Task Force. And last night, actually, they had their 40th anniversary reunion. It's one of the oldest task force that's been formed. And everything is mostly jointly where the New York Police Department, New York State Police, everyone works together and everybody has joint control of it. And that fits in the same role with Noble, where you have chapters throughout the six regions, 61 chapters. And in these chapters, some chapters are ran by the president is a federal member. Sometimes the president is a state local member. But all these chapters work and function toward one goal.
All right. Well, Will, thank you so much for what you've told us about Noble and especially about how DEA works with Noble and with the local law enforcement. We're going to stop here for a short break. When we return, we're going to learn a lot about veterinarians, how they keep our food safe, all that they do for the country and the issues that face federal veterinarians. We're going to hear from Michael Gilsdorf, the executive director of the National Association of Federal Veterinarians. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. When you say that you work for the federal government, many people out there immediately picture you wearing a suit, driving a government-issue sedan, and living in D.C. While that may be true for some, in reality, federal employees have a wider variety of jobs than most people could ever imagine, from postal workers to CIA agents, from working in an office to working in outer space. These jobs are all so different that it's hard to believe they have something in common, but they do. And that similarity is GEICO. As employees of the federal government, many of these people may be eligible for additional discounts on top of GEICO's already low rates. And just because the cost is lower doesn't mean that GEICO's service is anything less than top rate. So whether you're in animal control or air traffic control, call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO. Or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and I'm your host today. The second half of our show, we're going to be learning all about veterinarians and federal veterinarians. And let me start off, Mike, by welcoming you to Fed Talk. And Mike is the executive director of the National Association of Federal Veterinarians and a veterinarian yourself, correct?
Correct.
And I think you had a career as a federal employee. You had a career as a federal employee, Mike?
Yes, I worked for 33 years with the USDA.
And you're now retired?
I'm now retired.
And you're a full-time executive director, National Association of Federal Veterinarians?
Correct.
All right, tell me a little bit about what the Federal Association, National Association of Federal Veterinarians does.
Well, we try to support our members. We're a 501c nonprofit association. The National Association of Federal Veterinarians was the first constituent body of the American Veterinary Medical Association. And it's recognized by the USDA, Department of Agriculture, and the Food and Drug Administration as a representative organization for federally employed veterinarians.
I never thought of the federal government as a place for that hired a lot of veterinarians. How many are there?
Right now, there's about 3,000.
Really?
Yes.
And what do they do? How many animals does the federal government need to take care of?
Well, it's not only the animals they take care of, but all the different things that they do. The federal veterinarians work for 26 different federal agencies across the government. And at least one third of them work with the Food Safety Inspection Service in meat inspection and making sure that the food supply, the meat supply is and processed eggs are safe, wholesome, and labeled properly.
Processed eggs. And we just
processed
have a problem
eggs.
With that not too long ago.
Right.
Maybe still having a problem with it.
Well, shelled eggs is a current problem, I believe.
Is that different from processed eggs?
Yes. Yes, and they divide that up between agencies. Right now, the Food and Drug Administration handles shell eggs, and so they're handling the current problem with salmonella. But the Food Safety Inspection Service veterinarians work with processed eggs that have already been cracked and opened and put into different products.
So your veterinarians are actually out actually looking at whether our food supply is safe.
Correct.
Spending a lot of time on that.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about NAFV. How did it get started?
Well, that's an interesting question, and in order to kind of set the stage for it, I'd like to go back to the 19th century and describe what was happening then. Back in 1862.
During the Civil War.
Yes. President Lincoln established the Department of Agriculture. And in 1863, the American Veterinary Medical Association started as a professional association. But at that time, there were only about 300 accredited or graduate veterinarians in the whole country at that point. So so that's how many veterinarians there were at that point. And then in 1884, the Bureau of Animal Industry was started within the Department of Agriculture. And their role was to conduct scientific investigations, protect the public from infection and disease, from contaminated meat products, what we were just talking about, eradication of animal diseases, and improving livestock quality. So that's what the BAI was put into place for. By 1892, the BAI, federal veterinarians, and others within the BAI had eradicated contagious bovine pleuropneumonia.
Bovine, that means cow, doesn't it?
Cattle, correct.
Okay.
And that was
one veterinarian term I've learned.
And that disease was introduced from Africa, and it's still a problem in Africa, but we've been able to keep it out since then. By 1913, the AVMA had grown from 300 to about 1,650 members. But they changed their membership requirements in 1913 to say, hey, if you're going to be a member, you have to be a graduate of an accredited veterinary college. Prior to that, you could be a self-proclaimed practitioner and be a veterinarian. In 1915 was when the first women graduated from veterinary school. But it was in 1918 that NAFE started.
You've been around since 1918.
Yes, 1918 okay. is when it started. And it was started by BAI veterinarians who wanted to bring this group together okay. because
they don't exist today, that part of agriculture?
The BAI has changed, and it's now Food Safety Inspection Service, Animal Plant and Health Inspection Service, and the Agricultural Research Service. So it's evolved, yes. So it's still here, but it's in a different form. So, so that group of veterinarians wanted to be separate apart from the AVMA because they felt that they had a separate voice and they wanted to highlight things for the federal veterinarians. And NAFE is the second oldest managers and supervisors association working with the federal government. It's also recognized through formal agreements to consult with the federal agencies. So we do consult. We've done that this year again, working with them and bringing issues to them and then suggesting resolutions.
And when you work on these issues, do you work on issues that really protect the general public?
Yes, we do try to. It depends on the situation. And what we're asked to do, what our membership feels we need to work on. But for example, if it's in the Food Safety Inspection Service and we feel that there is a problem with the HACCP, which is the Hazard Analysis and Critical Control Point System, then we would try to bring that issue up and recommend a change. We usually don't bring problems up unless we think there's a resolution.
I wonder sometimes, you know, when I think about my experiences and having had dogs as pets over the years, it seems to me that when I take my dog to a veterinarian, it's gotten increasingly expensive to pay for the vet bill. And so that what it occurs to me that that must mean that being in private practice as a veterinarian is lucrative. Can it be as lucrative being a federal veterinarian, or do you find you have recruiting problems?
Well, we do have recruiting problems. In fact, there's a shortage in the government accountability offices. Did an audit. They were asked to do that. They demonstrated there was a shortage of federal veterinarians, and Senate had a hearing to talk about that. They asked the federal agencies and the Office of Personnel Management to come up with a resolution and how they were going to address those shortages. To talk about just one agency that has a shortage is the Food Safety Inspection Service again. They have about 1,000 veterinarians, but they've had a chronic problem in hiring veterinarians and keeping those positions full. And so that means that the veterinarians that are currently working are sometimes working two or three positions, which makes it very difficult for them to keep up. But so those agencies have had that problem. Now, all agencies don't. There's different pay authorities that are in place for different federal agencies. But the Department of Agriculture's agencies are under the GS schedule, the Title V. NIH agencies are under Title 42, Veterans Administration under Title 38. So
they all get paid different.
They all get paid differently, and in some cases, different amounts.
So if you're a veterinarian, what's the best federal agency to work for? Best system?
It depends on if you're talking pay or something else.
Okay. some agencies may have a better work environment.
That's true. There's a different environments. There's different types of things that you would do with NIH that you would. Versus USDA, and if you wanted to do animal research and develop better vaccines and better biologicals and things that would help animals, then you might work in the Agriculture Research Service. But in an NIH, you're going to be working with animals to help improve public health. So
Mike, you had a 33-year career as a federal veterinarian yourself. Where did you work?
Well, I worked with the part of USDA called the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, and specifically within that, the veterinary services. And I helped eradicate animal diseases primarily.
Okay. And a lot of your members work at the Food Safety Inspection Service. Is that, I think you mentioned that.
Yes.
And that's the one that I think really does affects our food supply on a daily basis.
Directly, yeah.
Tell me what the FSIS veterinarians do. How are they used?
The veterinarians are in charge of the different plants. Their title is...
And by plant, you mean where meat is processed.
Where the animals are slaughtered, yes.
Okay.
And so...
There's been some movies made about that are kind of unpleasant to watch, but
yes,
I don't know how realistic they are.
And those movies, especially years ago, helped stimulate better inspection, which we're all for. But they're in charge of all the activities within the plant. So... if anything goes wrong, it falls back to them, which is good and bad. I mean, so if anything goes wrong, it's also their fault. But even if it's not their fault, but so they're responsible to making sure that.
And are they always there at the plant when the plant's operating?
Yes, generally they are. Yes, and if they have two shifts, then they have another veterinarian coming in. Now, they also have situations where you want to look at the live animals before they come in and then look at everything afterward. And if they're slaughtering hundreds of animals an hour, then you can't do both at the same time. So sometimes they will have another veterinarian doing what they call anti-mortem inspection, making sure all the animals are healthy and...
It's before they're slaughtered.
Before they're slaughtered, yes.
Okay, and all of these veterinarians at the different agencies are all members of the National Association of Federal Veterinarians?
We have, out of the 3,000, we have about 1,000 that are members, that are active members.
And spread out throughout the NIH,
throughout the government.
Agriculture. And,
yes.
And the VA as well. What are at the Veterans Administration? I had not thought of veterinarians
well,
for the
again,
VA.
At the Veterans Administration, there's laboratory animals there they're doing work with, so someone needs to make sure that they're healthy and taken care
These
of.
These are for, like, medical experiments and things like that?
Yes, or to check with different things for the thing. And you know, the Veterans Administration is not one that I've worked closely with, but and there are not a lot of veterinarians there. But there are some.
There are some, and they're paid by Title 38, the ones that they have,
right.
Which is a different pay system. What kind of resources does NAFV offer its members?
Well, we have Several. First of all, we have our annual meetings, and we hold our meetings in conjunction with the American Veterinary Medical Association Convention and also with the U.S. Animal Health Association. We also have chapter meetings set up by our representatives, our local representatives, where we go around, and that could be anywhere in the country. We conduct an annual survey to determine the number of federal veterinarians because the government agencies don't have that capability right now. They don't track where all the veterinarians are, so we try to do that. We also do surveys as needed of our membership if there's an issue that we want to know about. We have... We offer scholarships to our members' children if they're going into an accredited veterinary college. We have a monthly newsletter that I edit. We try to provide pertinent articles for federal veterinarians, ranging from historical information to cutting edge technology. We also have a webpage and a Facebook and so forth.
Okay, what's your website, Mike?
Our website is the acronym for the National Association of Federal Veterinarians, so it's NAFV.org.
Okay, that's easy enough. We're going to stop now to hear a word from our sponsor. If you'd like to talk with us about veterinarian issues, Will is still here in the studio. Will Plummer from the Drug Enforcement Agency, the assistant to the president for federal issues at NOBLE, National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Officers. You can give us a call, 1-877-936-9333. That's a toll-free number. Or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. We'll be right back after this short break. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. By now, you've no doubt seen those car insurance commercials with the talking gecko on TV. He's always talking about how people could save 15% or more switching to GEICO. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal in and of itself. But get this. If you're an employee of the federal government, you may be eligible to save even more than that. That's something the Gecko didn't mention in all those commercials. And you've probably heard many times about how many people have switched to Geico. Millions. But what you might not know is how many people stay with Geico once they've switched. In fact, on average, Geico customers who are federal employees have stayed with the company for over 20 years. Now that's customer satisfaction. Sound like a good deal to you? Then just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, your host, and right now we're talking to Michael Gilstorf, the Executive Director of the National Association of Federal Veterinarians. So, Mike, when we took the break, we were talking a little bit about what federal veterinarians do and the challenge to recruiting them. And you mentioned that there's a shortage. But what's NAFV doing to help with the veterinarian shortage, the federal veterinarian shortage?
Well, we did work with the Government Accountability Office when they were doing their audit, and we tried to explain to them the whole scope of where the shortages are in the federal government and the effects that it has. We're working with the Senate staffers. We're also working with the Office of Personnel Management and the federal agencies in trying to help develop policies and procedures to help address those shortages.
Yeah, has more money been discussed? Sometimes that might help alleviate a shortage.
I definitely have discussed more money, and we need more money. As we talked about earlier, if we're competing with the private sector, which we are, to get more federal veterinarians, and there's a shortage of veterinarians totally because there are only 26 veterinary schools in the whole 28 veterinary schools. They only produce about 2,600 veterinarians a year. The average age of the federal veterinarian the average age of all veterinarians is over 55, but the federal veterinarians, it's even higher.
Over 55 for federal veterinarians?
Yes.
That's much older than the workforce as a whole, I think.
Yes, it is. And within just the Army, FDA and USDA, there are 27% of those veterinarians will be eligible to retire in 2012. So we need a way to encourage those new veterinarians to come on board and work for the federal government.
Well, I know physicians, medical doctors, have physicians' comparability pay because of the disparity between what physicians in the private sector make and what federal employees earn. Has anything been discussed like that for federal veterinarians?
Yes, and I've brought that up with congressional staffers and with the federal agencies as well. One of the problems we have is that existing legislation for physician comparability pay only covers physicians, dentists, and nurses. Veterinarians are not mentioned there. So veterinarians are the only medical officers within the government that don't qualify for that type of pay. That's one thing we want to work on. Now, we are looking right now with the agencies to see if there are existing authorities within Title V, Title 38, and so forth that could be applied to veterinarians. Don't have that answer yet.
But you're working with OPM and you're working with Congress and trying to come up with an answer.
Yes, we are.
Do the people that are involved in making these policies that work for our government, work either on the Hill or in the executive branch, have they got any ideas? Have they proposed anything? Or
well, on the congressional side, yes, I've worked with them. We've got a proposal ready, but we're not going forward with it yet because they want to see what the agencies themselves can come up with. So especially in USDA right now, the Agriculture Research Service, the Food Safety Inspection Service, and the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service have all come up with their own workforce assessments and what they think they need as far as retention and recruitment incentives and pay. I've not seen their final report. I've seen their draft report. Their draft report is saying that they're going to need those sorts of things in order to keep a viable veterinary workforce.
Okay, Mike, one of the things I found on my list, and I'm not sure if it is here by mistake, but it says that NAFV has interest in the government's telework policy. Is that correct?
A lot of our members do, yeah.
Well, I guess it surprises me a little bit because it's probably because I don't really fully understand everything you do. And I've heard John Barry, who's the director of OPM, who's one of the biggest advocates of telework, but he uses the example in saying not everyone can telework. The people, when he was the director of the National Zoo, the people that fed the animals or who took care of the animals, they had to go to had to be at the zoo.
Right.
So I would think that your veterinarians, they got to be at the meat plants, or they've got to go to the animals. So how can they telework?
Well, that's because there's a variety of different kinds of jobs okay. The veterinarians do in the government. If they're there inspecting the meat, they need to be there. But if they're licensing biologics, a lot of times they will do an inspection of a facility, and it'll take 2 days to write up that inspection report. They can do that at home just as well as they can do that in the office. They just need that time to write that up.
Sometimes, so it depends on the work.
So it really depends on the job itself. And that's what we support, is that not everyone is eligible. We know that. But we also think that whoever does telework should be accountable. So we're working right now with one agency to help modify their policy. And we've drafted a policy for them and offered it to them. And there we say that they have to be accountable, which means actually that you can really have a better accountability than the person that's in the office, because normally they don't have an accountability of what they did all day long when they're in the office.
Yeah, one of the things I've heard about over the last couple of years is this performance demonstration project at FSIS that I think I remember hearing a little bit about a rocky start to it. And are your members on that
Yes, and that's again within the Food Safety Inspection Service. It's the pay for performance, right now the name of it. The name is the Public Health Human Resources System, and it is a demonstration project. It's going for 5 years. This is the second year. Last year we had some problems, and we've been working with FSIS. There's both pros and cons to the current system, and we are working with FSIS to take care of anything that's negative. But for new hires, it's especially good because they've got different pay bands. And so if you were previously going to be hired as a GS-12, now you've got the ability to get a pay between a comparable GS-12 or 13 within that pay band 4.
Depending on how badly FSIS needs veterinarians, your qualifications and all of that.
And the qualifications are an important part of it, too. But also, if you were had been in the system for a long time and you're at the top of your grade, at the step 10 in the GS, you couldn't get a higher salary. So this was a good system for you too, because it allowed you to get something on top of that. But if the biggest problem that we ran into was that for any pay increase, it's totally dependent on the performance rating that you receive. And of course, that's the way it was set up. And so if you have good performance standards that are objective and measurable, and you have a good supervisor, you're probably going to do very well because they know what you're doing, and they'll rate you accordingly. But we have a lot of situations where the supervisor is remote, and they really don't know on a day-to-day basis what their employees are doing. So they have to rely on that employee to tell them. And that's one of the problems we ran into last year, is because everyone had to write their own accomplishments report, and they weren't used to doing that, and they came through in a different way. To address that, FSIS, we talked with FSIS about it, and they've listened, and they have developed examples and guidelines on how to prepare their accomplishments reports.
Okay. Well, tell me a little bit, Mike, in a couple of minutes that we have remaining here today on FedTalk, tell me a little bit about some of the issues that NAFV cares about. What are you working on now?
Well, again, one of them is related to pay. There's loan repayment. That's a good retention.
Student loan repayment. That's a big
student
issue.
Loan repayment.
Big issue for lawyers, too.
It's good. The average veterinary student graduates with $130,000 in loans. And so there is a program in place within the Department of Agriculture that is called the Veterinary Medical Loan Repayment Program. And that allows veterinarians to be reimbursed up to $25,000 a year. The problem with that is it's very limited. There's a limited budget, and so it really only applies to about 50 veterinarians in a year. And out of that 50 veterinarians, that's across the board, so it includes shortages in the private sector as well as the public. So for the federal veterinarians, that's only about 10% of that. In addition to that, there's another act that's called the Enhancement Act for loan repayment, and that one is asking that this money be tax deferred, so that more money could be going out to the students.
Okay, what other issues?
So
about a minute left.
Well, there was a Humane Slaughter Act. We worked on an amendment with the AVMA. This act is produced in 1978. And it covers cattle, swine, sheep, goats, and equine. We're pursuing an amendment so that all animals that are commercially slaughtered would be included under that inspection at state and federal slaughter establishments.
Okay. So, and you've been now executive director of NAFV for 3 years, I think?
Is it correct?
Just about 3 years. And you're having a good time, Mike. It sounds like you're getting in right in the middle of things.
I like working with the veterinarians, so yes, this allows me to keep doing that.
All right. Well, many thanks today to Will Plummer from the Drug Enforcement Agency, federal advisor to the president of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Officers, and to Michael Gilsdorf, who is the executive vice president of the National Association of Federal Veterinarians, and I believe you were also employed as executive director. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And many thanks to both of you for being on Fed Talk this afternoon. And that's all we have for today. Thank you very much for listening in. Remember, Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend.